This is NPR Illinois. I'm Jamie Dunn. In recent years, there have been multiple incidents of parents in the Chicago suburbs killing their adult children with disabilities and then killing themselves or trying to kill themselves. These tragedies prompted the Daily Herald to look at the pressures caregiver parents face. Marie Wilson wrote a series of stories on the topic. I sat down with Wilson to talk about them.
The story about caregivers for people with disabilities really started with some tragic cases in the suburbs that my editors had noticed, where parents of people with disabilities had sadly killed their children and either killed themselves or tried to. And we also knew that there were so many problems at the state level with funding for services for people with disabilities. And putting those two things together, we knew that caregivers and the stresses and challenges they face was something that we really wanted to look into more.
Some of those very tragic cases that you said you and your editors had noticed that kind of kick this story off. Can you tell me a little bit about what some of those were?
Some of the tragic cases we've noticed in the suburbs began about 2013 when there was an autistic boy in River Grove who was killed by his mother and his godmother, who were his main caregivers. Another case in 2014 in Elmhurst involved two adults with disabilities who were killed by their father, who then killed himself and his wife. Other cases like this also have occurred in Schaumburg and in Oak Forest. And these were cases where the caregivers really just got to the end of their rope and were at a desperation point and felt that there was no other way for them to continue going on than to take their child's life and also to attempt to take their own.
One of the things that I learned from your story that really sort of drove home this stress on parents, especially as they age, worrying about what's going to happen to their children when they're gone, was that stat that it was, you know, over 32, almost 33,000 adults living with caregivers that are 60 or older. Can you tell me a little bit about that, just what that pressure is like and what you found there?
Those caregivers are losing their mobility themselves and losing that ability to provide some of the care. Their children are not as independent as other children who don't have disabilities, so they have to really be making an entire life plan for their child of how they're going to be cared for and where they will live and just how they can be provided for when their parents are not around. And that really requires the parents to think a lot about their own mortality in a way that might not be natural.
And the age of the person with the disability is kind of important here as far as what's available to them. Once folks reach a certain age, they're cut off from a lot of services, right?
That's right. The definitive age is the day before someone's 22nd birthday, and that's when school services are no longer allowed for people with disabilities. Usually, a young adult with disabilities will have continued going to a school program where they've been learning some life skills and some work skills and independence, and that takes up a lot of their day. But right before they turn 22, they're no longer able to go to that service, which is a major transition point, not only in the life of the person with disabilities, but also in the life of their caregiver, because the caregiver really needs to be planning and preparing for that point so that ideally their child can go into a new program, maybe a vocational day program or some recreation or a job or volunteering. And just continue to have a place to spend their time and other people to be with so they can have that full life. So when school services end is really a trying and a challenging time for these caregivers.
And the state has entered into legal agreements to, you know, provide care for folks. But of course, the waiting list is very long to try to get into a group home or get some of those services. Can you tell me a little bit about what you found when it came to folks waiting for services?
The waiting list is one of the big challenges for parents because the state does offer help with housing and therapy and training and employment, but the state does not have the funding or the ability to provide that help for all of the people who need it. So there is a waiting list that has at least 18,000 people on it for different types of state services, and it often takes months or years to receive help while waiting on that list, which just puts a lot of strain on caregivers.
Someone had told you in your story that it was kind of the norm to be waiting for a while, or?
Yes, I have heard that getting services quickly from the state's waiting list would be a rare occurrence, but the norm is to be waiting and just feeling almost as a parent as if it's random when services are provided, even though there is a lot of prioritization that goes on within the waiting list to classify the needs as crisis, emergency, or more of a planning need for the future. So while there is that level of priority, the parents themselves don't always know how things are working with the state, and so they feel that they're just waiting to be pulled and given services at who knows what point.
Another thing in your story that came as maybe a bit of a surprise is that most folks with disabilities are living at home. And what did parents have to say as far as what that's like from the day to day, what the stress level is like as far as being primary caregivers?
The parents that I've talked with said a lot of the stress just comes from the constant nature of the needs of their children with disabilities. As opposed to a normally developing child or young adult, their children just need them all the time. It's really a 24/7 job. Maybe they have a child who has autism who can get into phases where he'll ask repeated questions over and over if things are not going how he expects them to. And the parents will have to find a way to answer him that will satisfy him and get him to stop asking those questions. Or maybe it's a family of a person who has Down syndrome who might be struggling with depression or with other consequences that could be related to his disorder. And either way, the needs never stop. And the parents tell me that that's what causes them a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, even sometimes heart trouble. And then they end up dealing with their own health problems along with their children's.
You talked with one family that's taking kind of an unconventional approach to finding care for their adult child. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
One family I have spoken with in Naperville, the Copel family, is an example of caregivers who are taking their child's needs into their own hands to the best of their ability and really coming up with their own solution. So the Copels have a son who has autism, who is 24. And they know that he really does not deal well with change. But they also know that they're getting older themselves and they won't always be able to care for their son. So what they've done actually is built an addition onto the back of their house where they, as the parents, are going to move. And that will allow the rest of their home to be turned into a group home where their son can live with some roommates and also with a caregiver. And he can gain some more independence, but also just be right at home in his element. So a solution like this does really take some personal resources, and it takes a lot of understanding of the system. But for some families, the Copels and plenty of others across the suburbs, this is one of the best ways to make sure that their child's needs are met.
You also spoke with a mom whose adult son is waiting to get a placement in a group home. What did she have to say?
Patricia Fisher is an example of someone who is playing the waiting game. Her son, Christopher Lum, is 30, and he has Down syndrome, and she has put in an application for him to live in a group home because she thinks that he will have a lot fuller life there as opposed to living at home where she's a single parent. She's not there for him. She has to work during the day, and he has been struggling with his depression and has stopped going to his work program. Right now, Chris is living at home and is on his own a lot of the time. And with the application for housing services in, Patricia does have a degree of hope that she thinks at this point, maybe early next year, Chris could be living in a group home. But this has been a process of months and months for her already, and she is still frustrated with how slowly it's moving, especially because she feels a lot of anxiety over how Chris is doing at home alone. And she's also been experiencing some heart problems. And she thinks a lot of her health problems are tied to her role as a caregiver for her son. So she's in a tough spot right now waiting, but she does think that her son could be living in a group home by sometime next year.
It's got to be hard for parents to care for their child, which is a 24/7 job, and then also be an advocate at the same time, which could potentially be almost a full-time job, right? To try to advocate for finding services for them and getting them on the waiting list and do all of those things.
Parents tell me that the advocate role is really important, especially when their children are in school, because that means they need to work with educators on their individual education plans and making sure that their student is getting the education in the best setting possible. And advocating can be a role that doesn't come naturally to all parents, but it is something that is time-consuming and really just adds to the burden of duties that parents of people with disabilities need to do.
As far as the capacity for services and why it's not there, especially for group home placements, were you hearing that that was mostly a budgetary issue, that there isn't the money, or are there just not the beds, or is it a mix of both, maybe?
It seems that there are several reasons why there are not enough group homes, and some of that is because of the challenge and the cost and the regulations of setting up group homes. So this is something that takes a lot of resources for disability service agencies and nonprofits to do. So while these organizations easily would like to start more group homes, it does take a lot of people and a lot of money to do that. Another challenge in providing group homes, I've heard from a lot of advocates, is the fact that workers, these personal support workers who are hired to staff the group homes, are paid at a state-approved rate that has not been increased in several years. And that makes it very difficult to fill those positions and to get qualified people to provide the skilled help at group homes. And that's one of the key elements that makes a group home successful for many people with disabilities, is that it's a supervised setting and it provides the support they need to keep their life structured.
How did state officials at the Department of Human Services respond when you talked to them for this story?
One thing that I heard from the state Division of Disability within Human Services is that the state is really trying to be more flexible within its own rules. The state is recognizing that people with disabilities are all very different in terms of the type of housing needs they have and the type of situation that would be most beneficial for them. So the state tells me that they're trying to allow people more individuality in terms of the way the state programs can meet their needs. So the state does recognize that there's a need to serve more people, and there's a need to serve more people more quickly. And I do get the feeling that state leaders in this area are doing the best they can.
And you focus mostly on the suburbs here because that's your readership area, and that's where a lot of these more tragic cases have happened. But did you hear from sources that this is kind of a statewide problem, or is this something that is more focused in the suburbs?
Yes, I have heard from sources, including some I spoke with in the Peoria area, that across the state there is a problem with the capacity of not having enough services for people with disabilities. So families, really, no matter where they're at in Illinois, are the ones that are mainly providing care for people with disabilities, even as they get into adulthood. Unfortunately, Illinois ranks right at the bottom of the list. We're 47th in a study by United Cerebral Palsy in terms of how well Medicaid and other state programs provide for people with disabilities. So having such a low ranking like that proves that this issue of stress for caregivers because they have trouble getting services for their children really is a statewide issue.
You talked with Stephen Boyce, who has started a group for parents of children with disabilities. Can you tell me a little bit about his story and what he had to say?
Stephen Boyce is the CEO of Day One Pact, which is a disability services agency that helps connect people to the state waiting list. And he has run that agency for a while. And when there was a tragic case of a boy with autism being killed by his mother and godmother in River Grove, he felt like it really touched home for him because he lives in River Grove, just down the street. He's on the school board there, and this case just was too tragic and too preventable in his eyes. So what he did at Day One Pact was start a parent support group, and he hired a woman who has a son with autism and also has a background in the field to be the parent advocate and to lead support group meetings and help the parents connect with each other and learn that they're not alone and learn that there are services out there to help them with their planning needs or to help them with getting their children more support. He really took what was a tragedy right in his hometown and turned it into something that has helped at least 225 parents in only about a year and a half.
And you talked to some other folks who tried to deal with the situation as far as planning goes and that sort of thing. What kind of options are out there for parents beyond, you know, the waiting list? What else can they perhaps do to alleviate some of their worry?
Future planning experts tell me that parents of people with disabilities can begin to save for their child in a special needs trust, which can set aside some funding to help supplement what they're able to receive through the government and just to help maybe hire a personal support worker or hire a respite worker to come in and give the caregivers a little bit of a break. So with forming a special needs trust, parents can begin to plan ahead for some of the financial needs that their children will have. And, you know, experts also tell me that it's important to have that trust and to have a lawyer set it up legally and do it right, because that will just really spell out who's going to be responsible for providing care for the person with disabilities when the parents are gone. And that can be really challenging for parents to think about, because they get so used to being the only person who can take care of their child. But if they put some thought into it and work with maybe a nonprofit or a lawyer, they can learn that there are ways to provide for that care even when they're no longer able to do it themselves.
That was Marie Wilson with the Daily Herald. She wrote a series of stories about the challenges faced by parents caring for their adult children with disabilities. You can find a link to Wilson's stories at our website, nprillinois.org.